Welcome back to the D1 Softball Podcast, everyone. I'm Jenna Becerra, along with the best co-host in the land, Amanda Lorenz, and we are so excited to be back with you this week. Today's episode is brought to us by our friends at S2 Cognition. S2 Cognition delivers a revolutionary approach to helping athletes understand how in-game decisions impact their performance from the youth levels all the way to the pros. Amanda, I can't wait. Every week we're excited, but even more so, I guess, every single time.
So good. I mean, what a treat this weekend was. All of the games that I watched were so fun to watch, and I can't wait to chat about them.
Oh, man. So much good stuff coming our way. In today's lineup, we will talk about top 25 rankings, a hot topic right now. We did get to chat with Vivi Martinez from Texas Softball after their huge series win against OU, so you'll get to see that. And then we'll jump into plays of the week, win and whiff of the week, and all the good stuff.
Let's do it.
Okay, so top 25 chat. I feel like I constantly am like, oh, this is a big topic this week, but it feels like a little bit bigger even so this week after everything that happened.
Oh yeah, I'm going to put our top 25 from D1 Softball on the screen this week, just so we can get a quick look before we enter the chat. But initial thoughts?
So the changes. Obviously, in the top five, Texas is back at number one after taking the series. As we mentioned, OU slides down to number two. Stanford, Oklahoma State, and Duke rounded out in the top five. So if we're taking a look at that, also the biggest movers this week, Texas A&M, Florida, and Arkansas, climbed the most after they all had successful weekends at home. So the Aggies are up to number 13. They climb four spots after their series win against Kentucky. Florida moves up to number seven, your Gators, Amanda, after a series win over LSU. And Arkansas moves up to number 11 after they took the series from Missouri. Then Louisiana and Oregon there at the bottom, they re-enter the rankings. Another conference sweep for the Raging Cajuns. And Oregon took the series over top 10 Washington. Oof. I feel like we always only scratch the surface, right, at this point.
I know. Like, we really could go at each top a lot about each team in the top 25. But obviously, I think Florida moving up, awesome. And it really felt like a super regional matchup between them and LSU. So it makes sense that they're neck and neck. I feel like whoever was going to win that series was going to go above them, one another. And then a huge weekend for Arkansas as well.
Yeah. Like, that's actually the fun part, I think, about this time of year. There are certain conferences, especially like the SEC, like the Pac-12, blah, 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 where it is like a super, like we're seeing postseason action in the middle of conference, and it's so fun.
Oh yeah. That's exactly how I felt watching the Georgia-Tennessee series as well. Like it felt like, obviously, OU Texas was almost a national championship type environment of how elite that was. But I just really felt like the Florida LSU series was so evenly matched. Like, it was so fun to watch, really felt like postseason. And I felt the same for Georgia, Tennessee. Like, both of those felt like they were super regional games where everything was on the line. And, you know, you could see it with the players a little bit too. Like, some looked a little bit tight, like wanting to win so badly that it looked like the season was on the line.
Man. It makes me miss it a little bit, you know, back.
But also, like, I have loved being a fan too, like to be able to really appreciate all of these games. And, you know, obviously we know what these athletes have been through or what they're going through, of just how hard it is to win, how hard it is to be a student athlete. And gosh, it's been so fun to see our sport just absolutely explode. And the product, which, I mean, we've known, it's been so fun to watch, but I feel like, you know, so many more are on the train as well. Just so exciting for women's sports. I know a huge, huge week for college basketball. Like, it just felt it just feels really, really cool to be a female athlete or a female working in sport right now. And gosh, that's just such a freaking fun feeling.
I mean, no notes, nailed it. Like, I have nothing else to say. I mean, you're so right. You're so right. And I love the basketball call out too, because seeing the March Madness stuff, like that type of attention is just going to lift things for Mayhem when it comes up for us, or just any sport, right, that's going on. Yeah. It's so exciting.
I mean, like, I've always been like a self-proclaimed like female athlete, like hype gal. Like, I love all the female sports, but this was my first weekend turning into college basketball. Like, you know, I wanted to see Caitlin Clark face Paige Beckers. Like, there was so much hype surrounding that game. Like, they're creating more fans, and it's just so cool. And I hope that, you know, what they've done, we're doing too, you know, to get more fans. But like, it makes sense with the numbers, just with how elite these athletes are. Like, people want to watch greatness. So that's, I'm sure, I can't wait to see the viewership numbers for the OU Texas series, because again, like, people want to watch greatness. They want to watch competitive games. They want to watch two legends going at it. Like, it's just so, so awesome.
Just the amount of conversation that has stirred from it too, for both, like, for the basketball side. And then, yeah, OU Texas, like, the amount of discussion on social media and stuff of people who care so much about it is awesome. And we see that a lot every week, especially with like top 25 rankings and things like that. Yeah. But it's only growing, and it's so cool. Mm-hmm. Like, every once in a while I'll step back and I'm like, I can't believe this many people care this much. It's actually so cool.
Oh yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, we had plenty of questions too. Speaking of that discussion, plenty of questions about the top 25 this week. We can just honestly start right off the bat with one. So one question we had was Duke. They have the same record number of losses as Oklahoma. So people are wondering, what about them?
Yeah, I think that, and I don't have the official breakdown of strength of schedule in front of me, but I would, just from glancing, I would say comes down to strength of schedule. I think Oklahoma, the teams that they've faced and the competition they've faced up to this point have just been a little bit stronger than Duke. I have been so impressed with Duke. I think they're doing an amazing job, and obviously they're winning a lot of games and doing the things that they're supposed to do. But I think it just really comes down to playing that competition and winning big games.
Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to as well. Also, because of all the positive things you just said, like, yes, they're in the top five, right? Like,
yeah.
Because they've had a solid season so far. But I think you're right. Like, the top 10 opponent that they did face this year was OU, and they lost that game. They don't have as many of the big wins as some of the other teams that are in the top five around them. And if we do want to get in the nitty gritty of the numbers, if you're looking at Diamond Sports rankings, so our, you know, sports specific alternative to RPI, they're behind Texas, OU, and Stanford in DSR. So they're at number five. Their strength of schedule in DSR is 59. This is all as of us chatting right now, recording this, since it's updated on a daily basis. But really, it's the same for RPI. They're behind those three as well. They're number six. They're still, again, they're still high up, right? So that's why they're in the top five in the rankings. But they're number 35 in strength of schedule when it comes to the RPI numbers too. So just keeping those things in mind. But I they're contenders, right? Like, this is not, by no means are they out of it.
Oh, absolutely not. I think, you know, the team itself has done all the things that they are meant to do, right? Like, the athletes can't control the rankings of their opponents. You know, that's not necessarily what they should be worried about, but just what they've had an amazing season. And it just really, when you make these rankings, that's what you have to look at. So that's really what it comes down to. But not to say that they haven't been so impressive and have been taking care of the things that they needed to take care of.
Yes. And I think we're only going to see, like, they seem to be kind of building up. I wouldn't be surprised if they peak at the right time. Like, we're only going to see great ball from them from here on out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oof. All right. So that was the first piece. Next one. This is a bit of a longer one, but the point is about Georgia. So Georgia seems to always land around the nine spot. I'm just curious on your thoughts on the Bulldogs. What's putting them in the nine spot? Batting, pitching, defense, or all of the above?
Yeah, I think it probably has more to do with the people above them rather than Georgia. I think that they are still so impressive. Just, you know, obviously them losing the series to Tennessee, that's gonna put them down a little bit, or below Tennessee, I should say. And then just look at the seasons that LSU and Florida have had. That's, they're kind of right above them. LSU, obviously, they were almost a contender for the number one spot, being a last undefeated team. You know, they've lost some series that have made them slip a bit. And then Florida's just kind of been that steady, annoying person in the rankings that just has kind of stayed here, and they keep winning and going up the rankings. But I just really think that, you know, they've been steady and just not having these if they won the Tennessee series, especially being at Tennessee, we would have seen a shift in them. I don't think there's something that they're doing that lacks, in my opinion, or that specifically needs to work on, obviously. Just winning more games and putting together the pieces at the right time, obviously. But I think that they have a very explosive, strong lineup that can hit home runs at any time. I think that their pitchers are the best that they've been in years and are been doing a great job. And their defense is the best that they've been in years. So I don't think that there's something specific that we need to be like, this needs to get better for Georgia. I think it's just about winning softball games.
Yep, with you on that. Because to me, they're still very much a contender in my book.
Oh, 100%.
And you're so right. The batting, pitching, defense piece of this, yeah, they're good in all of those areas. And the defensive part as well, I feel like they've really improved with like JT and all he does defensively too, mm-hmm. being on the staff, et cetera. Like those pieces are all there. And to be fair too, Tennessee was ranked higher than them, right? So like the game never knows like who's supposed to win, right? But if you want to play that game, like they were supposed to take that series from Georgia. So it's not like they had bad losses there either. You know, it's one of those things where we just have to see it play out. Like this is why doing these rankings every week is one of the hardest things I've ever done, I think, like as somebody in this sport, because there are so many arguments for so many different teams, for so many different reasons to either be in the rankings, who should be in the top 10, who should be in the top 5. But to your point, Georgia's been steady enough to where like they have stayed in the top 10. Some other teams have kind of like wiggled back and forth a little bit, but they have really stayed there pretty consistently, as they should.
Yeah. And then one of my favorite things to do, like when rankings come out, is just like play the postseason game of like, if the seeds held and those seeds won their regionals, who would match up with in super regionals. So even just like looking at this, and Georgia would be the 9 seed and the 8 seed would be LSU. So Georgia going to LSU for a super regional, like just talk about like, that would be such a fun super regional to watch, right? Like both of those teams have been so consistent. And I think that that's always the most exciting super regional watch, is like the 8 and 9 seeds going at it, because it just feels like the thing separating those two teams might have only been the fact that they played that season and the winner of that series gets the 8 seed. Like it just feels so even and so fun to watch. Like I think I remember in, I think it was 2017, Texas A&M was the 9 seed, played at Tennessee in a super regional. And it was just so fun to watch, like so competitive. And that's always my favorite one to watch. So if those seeds hold and for some reason Georgia's the 9 seed and LSU is the 8 seed, like what a fun super regional that would be, right?
Totally agree. By the way, there are some parts of supers that make it my favorite, maybe even like more than parts of the World Series to watch, because of everything that you're saying.
Way harder to win a super regional than it is to win in Oklahoma City.
Yeah. Way it's harder. Like for the early Oklahoma City games. Yeah. I think like the supers are, and to your point too, I've been there too. We were the number 8 seed my freshman year. Arizona was the number 9 seed. We had taken the series during Pac-12 play that year. We won the first game in supers at home, and then we lost the next two that we played in the same day. That was before they split it up into 3 days, which to this day, I'm like, could have made a difference, but you know, it is what it is. But yes, it's like, then you have those moments, and then the 9 seed ended up going to Oklahoma City. Like those
crazy.
Oh man. Especially when you factor in the conference stuff, like you're saying, like if it were LSU in Georgia, oh man.
Totally. Whew.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. I like that thought process too, for sure, that you have looking at those. Cause I think about that too all the time. Like, oh, well, are these top 16 going to host? You know, how does that work? We did get some questions as well about Oklahoma State. How is Oklahoma State still that low? I would argue that top 5's not low, right? But, I think this is coming from people who argue that what if Oklahoma State could be number 1 or number 2, you know?
Yeah, and I would say that's a valid question, right? Like them taking a series, it was at home, but against a really good Texas team, like has to mean something, right? Like I think that that's a really valid question. I think that it's just so hard when you're comparing these things. I hear you. I would not have been shocked. I do not vote on the polls, but I would not have been shocked if we saw Oklahoma State in some one positions, like them being the top. of the polls. But I also wouldn't have been shocked if OU stayed at one, right? Like, I think that OU being number one has created a different standard. Like, it feels like they slip up, and that is not normal for Oklahoma. So we're quick to like take them out of the number one spot. But like every other number one team in the country, like it felt like it was pretty normal for the number one team in the country to lose a series once a year, right? Like that wasn't unheard of and didn't usually result in them getting removed from the number one spot. You know, I can think of my time at Florida. We were number one, a good amount, probably 15, 16, and 17. And I remember us shifting a little bit, but like all of us were losing, right? And I feel like OU has created this new standard of excellence, right? Of like literally not losing games. Like them losing a game is a national headline, which is not normal for the rest of us, right? So I think that comes down. It just, they've created a new standard for the number one spot, in my opinion, that has created to a lot more shifting throughout the year. But also everybody's been so competitive that it makes us want to say like, oh, this squad is more deserving of the number one spot if OU slipped for a week, you know? So I can see both sides, but I truly believe that OU has created this new standard.
Yeah. The OU standard is above the regular number one standard.
That's the correct way of that. I should have said it. I know I went on for a long period of time.
No, just reinforcing it. Cause I also agree with you. Like they only have three losses too, right? The same argument that's being used for Duke, like, well, they only have three losses, et cetera. It's like, well, so does Oklahoma, you know? So there's an interesting argument to be made.
Two of those losses coming to a very amazing Texas team. which the losses on Duke's resume do not match up with the losses of Oklahoma's resume. I mean, the ULL one is comparable to their losses, but you losing two to Texas, those aren't bad losses by any means. No, exactly. No person doing the rankings is going to look at that and be like, yikes.
Right. Exactly. There are so many different elements to it. And also I think there's something positive in the fact that there are arguments to be made for more than just Oklahoma to be number one. Like people can make arguments. We've talked about at least four different teams that people are making arguments, and we can see arguments being made for to be number one, whether that's Texas, who we have at the top of our rankings, OU, Oklahoma State, or even Duke, right? And then there's Stanford in the top five as well. Like the fact that we actually have these things is kind of exciting. Like the Big 12 championship is more interesting this year than it was last year, right? Like because Oklahoma State and Texas have this like little triangle going on where it's like OSU beat Texas in the series, Texas beat Oklahoma. Like that stuff is what also makes it a little bit more interesting. And I think Patty Gasso said it afterwards. She's like, we needed this, you know? And that's like the mentality that they have is not like, oh, now, you know, we've been knocked off our pedestal, like poor us. They're like, oh no, they utilize these experiences.
Yeah, I think that she has been very vocal about every loss that they've had. Like she embraces that and wants it for her team. I don't think it's something that obviously she wants to win every single game, right? Like that's not she's not wanting them to lose. But I think that you learn the most from the losses, and it can be like a little bit of a reality check. Not like they were playing that way at all. Like they still played so great and were so competitive, but you know, you need a little adversity to really see what you're made of and see what the true DNA of your team is. Like, how are everybody is so happy and easy to be around when you win.
Yeah.
Right? Like when we're playing well, it's really easy to show up to practice and have a smile on my face if I'm not playing, even though we're winning. But like, you know, when there's some adversity and the starters aren't playing well, like how does that shake up your team? And are you guys going to point fingers? Are you going to show up ready to go, still with that smile, ready to roll at practice? And I think that that's what Coach Gasso embraces, you know, with the what comes from the losses is she wants to see how her leaders respond, how her freshmen respond, how her role players respond. Like, are you guys really just these happy-go-lucky, competitive, awesome athletes to be around, even when it's hard, right? Like, that's when you see the most from your squad. So I think that that's why she's been so vocal about, hey, like, we're not shying away from these things. Like, we want it. We want it, and we also want to learn, and we want to show up to practice after losing this series to Texas to talk, get vulnerable, talk about what went wrong and how are we going to fix it right now? And we know we were better than we showed, or da da da. You know, like, I think that that's why they're so great and have been so great, is like, even with perfection always looming or everyone expecting perfection from them. And I'm sure they expect perfection from themselves as well, right? Like, they're too good to not expect perfection, right? And win every game. But that's just what makes them so good. Like, they also embrace what happens right after the loss of like, okay, let's go. This was good for us and we're going to be better because this wasn't the national championship. This was the middle of the season, right? Like,
yep.
What a perfect time for us to have this series and then get to practice 2 days later.
Exactly. It actually makes practice more exciting in a way. And it's interesting in that sense. Yeah. It's if they go forward, I mean, they've even had moments even last year where it's like Super Regionals against Clemson was rough. They almost didn't go to Oklahoma City, right? It's not the first time that they were like, oh, we're facing some hard stuff. And that's a good thing. I remember Patty Gasso saying when they got to Oklahoma City, like, oh, if we can face pitchers like what we saw at Clemson and competition like that, and then they face Stanford early on, and that she's like, if we can face that pitching, like, that's exactly what we need to go the rest of the way, you know? So it's just the mindset thing, the championship mindset.
Yeah.
Well, we could keep going, honestly, forever. Totally. I feel like I always say that because it's always true. So,
yeah.
But we did get a chance to, speaking of like all this Big 12 talk, which is exciting for the conference, we did get a chance to chat with Viviana Martinez from Texas softball after this incredible weekend. So we will jump right into that. We are so excited to have Texas infielder, unanimous 2023 Big 12 all-freshman team selection, and RBI record holder among first years in program history, Vivi Martinez. Thank you for joining us. We're super excited. I can't believe all that's going on for you right now.
Thank you for having me.
We are so excited.
Yes. Like, we feel like we could start in like 50 million places, honestly, because we have so many questions for you. But I would just start with, like, how are you doing? Because it is the middle of the season. It's the middle of the grind, in the middle of conference play. There's still a lot of season left. So just how are you in general?
You know, I'm doing good. I mean, it's a lot, obviously, like being a student athlete and going through conference, and not only with like softball, like school too, but almost done with school. So hopefully it'll like lighten up after that. But personally, I'm doing really good. And with the team, like we're still competing and working and doing everything like that, even on a travel schedule. So it can be a little tiring, but we're still grinding.
I love it. And just how are you feeling? Obviously, a huge weekend, winning at home, beating OU for the first time in a series, with winning the series since 2009. So how are you feeling? I'm assuming you guys have still not come down from that high.
Oh yeah, it was so exciting. Like, just the atmosphere, like being there, playing them. They always bring a great like game and competition and close game and all of that. And especially with the fans, like, I want to thank the OU fans and the Texas fans. It was just a great environment to be in and so exciting. And everybody's was just so pumped up. And, you know, winning that series was a big accomplishment, but it's just another page in the book. And we'll have to look forward to our next game tomorrow against Texas State, who's also in the top 25, and then Baylor this weekend.
Yeah, a lot of good softball in Texas, isn't it?
Right. Yes.
Yeah, that's exciting. But also just the rivalry aspect. Like, Amanda and I talk about it all the time. We have some fun banter even like outside of the podcast too, just about things that are going on. But to actually be part of the Red River rivalry, like, how do you describe it? By the way, you seem to thrive in that rivalry. You've done really well the past couple of seasons.
It's just, I don't know. It's nothing I ever expected. Like, whenever coming here last year, I've heard of it, of course, but like, just never been in it. You really have to be in it to experience it, because it's like, oh, the rivalry, like, of course is going to be like that. I don't know how to explain it. Like, it's just going to be a tough series because they both bring great competition and always that pride and that proximity, you want to call it, for that Red River rivalry. So it's just really cool to be in and experience that.
Must be cool too, even just with like football games and
other
sports. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't been to the football game yet, but it's kind of hard too since it's in Dallas, but I plan on going.
You got to do it.
Do it. Yeah. Do it. There's nothing like when you are actually a student athlete. Like you can go as an alum, but like still like take advantage of it. Go make it happen with you and your roommates. Go, like it would be so fun. It looks so much fun as an outsider.
No, it does. It does. Me and my roommates are planning on going. We will go. We have a bucket list.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That you touched on the atmosphere just from a viewer and a fan, just a softball fan watching. It was like so amazing for our sport just to see the amount of fans that showed up. It looked like so packed. There was so much passion, like so loud in the stands, like just unbelievable. So just talk about that environment. Have you experienced an environment like that before? And how do you think that prepares you for postseason and playing in Oklahoma City?
Yes, we have, or I have faced it before, like last year when we played at in Oklahoma State against Oklahoma as well. So it was very packed and all that. And so I would say that their energy in the stands kind of transfers to us, like playing on the field, and we get hyped over the small things, the big things, everything. And so it's just a lot of passion in the game, especially with the crowd like that. And it really prepares you, because obviously if you do go to the College World Series, you're going to be playing on that big stage and big platform. So just to know that pressure and all those emotions that you feel then, it kind of prepares you for that.
Speaking of pressure, you all are number one in D1 softball's rankings this week. And it's not the first time this year, right, that y'all have experienced that. Is that something you think about, or do you guys feel pressure being in that number one spot and being at the top?
Honestly, no. I think as a team, we focus more on the program itself and the team itself as well. We have this like team identity / motto that we call it. It's win from within. So it's more like focusing on ourselves as an individual and as a team. And it's just us against the world.
I love it. What do you think you guys learned, your key takeaway from that loss? You guys lost the series to Oklahoma State. I feel like that was probably pivotal for you guys, especially like a little check going into the Oklahoma series. So what do you think was the biggest change? What do you think you guys learned from that series that helped you eventually take the series from OU?
That first game, I think we just learned to adjust. I mean, we faced Maxwell, which is obviously a really great arm, and just having to adjust from her different pitches. And since she has so many, like, we just have to focus on what we needed to hunt and obviously like be aggressive. So we did good defensively. It's just adjusting to the hitting.
Totally.
Well, and we dropped one series to an Oklahoma team. Can't do it twice, right? Like that's, we're coming back strong against OU.
Yes.
But does it add any layer to it, the fact that this is the last year you all are in the Big 12 before moving to the SEC? Does that like add a little more motivation? Is there like anything that you guys feel from that piece?
Does it just mean more?
Of course, Amanda.
Yeah, I would say it means a little bit more. Like just our last year being the Big 12, we want to leave a mark on it and hopefully win that Big 12 championship. So we're just aiming for that goal for now.
Yeah. I mean, you'll go with OU anyway to the SEC. So that rivalry is not done by any means.
Thank goodness.
I know.
You touched on it a little earlier, just about Jenna brought up, you know, the rivalry and you not knowing really until you're in it. So from Arizona, talk to us just about why Texas, and then just how this feels to play in this rivalry coming from a kid who isn't from Texas and isn't growing up with hating OU in their blood.
Never. There's never hate with OU. There's never hate. But anyway.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Anyways. So coming from Arizona, I would say in about like eighth grade, before that rule where we couldn't talk to the coaches, I was committed to Oregon with Coach White. And so when he had left to go to Austin, that kind of opened up my like choices as well. And so I was still in contact with like Oregon and deciding what I wanted to do then. But then I came to Austin and I visited, and I just really loved like the environment and like the city and met all the girls. So I just loved I fell in love with it. So I came here and just, of course, like learning about the Red River rivalry and all of that. It was just like something to not expect, but obviously like, I don't know how to like word it. Like, it's going to come up obviously. And like, you're going to be excited and you just want to see, like, you don't know what to expect, honestly. And so like, whenever you do experience it, you're like, wow, this is actually like really cool. I'm glad I picked this school.
Love it. So cool.
That is super cool. And I will say, some people are not huge fans of the Texas orange. What would you say to the burnt orange haters?
I don't know. I think the burnt orange looks good on me.
Period.
It looks good on me. So
that's all that matters.
Try it out.
I love it.
Amazing.
Okay, so obviously the biggest play of the weekend was Reese Atwood holding on to that ball and getting that last out. Just talk about the impact that she has on your team and just how excited. I mean, your guys' reaction to her coming up with that ball still in her glove was infectious. Like, watching on TV, I got goosebumps. Like, it was just so cool. So just talk to us about that moment and then just the impact that Reese has on your whole team.
I think what makes it even like bigger, what made us so like happy and excited and all of that, was that for the past like couple weeks, she has been working on like tags and all that stuff. And we obviously like learned about the rule since Coach White is on the rule committee. So like, her working on that and then it being the like final play of the biggest game was just like, I don't even know how to, it was so exciting and so thrilling and just so like, I'm proud of her because obviously like it pays off. And as we've seen it in the Oklahoma game, but yeah, it's just continuing to work hard and actually achieve that, which is so exciting and so fun to see.
Yes. And then talk to just about her impact on your team and how it is.
She's just an overall amazing player. Like, she's very energetic, as you can see sometimes behind the plate, or even like she has a great bat and catching and all of that. She's just very, it's how would you say? It's like, it transfers to the whole team as well. Like, seeing her hard work, and then we obviously see that, and it motivates us and encourages us. And so seeing that just helps the whole team and want to work harder and all of that.
And you were part of that relay, right? Yeah. Cause I feel like everyone's talking about, you know, the center fielder getting an in, right? And then the tag at the plate, but like, you were in the middle there. So that's gotta feel good too.
It was right whenever I saw Kaden like go overhead. It was, I mean, we've been working on the relays too. So to have that down and then be able to transfer quick and get it to home to see Reese catch it and tag her and hold on to it was just amazing.
Honestly, the fact that you said that that's something that she's been working on too, like, I got a little bit of chills because I think all of us as players, right, we know what that feeling is, but then to witness it in a teammate,
exactly,
really nothing better. That is so cool.
Mm-hmm. It makes the celebration so much better.
Yes. As you saw.
Yeah, I love it. No, it's so cool.
Amazing.
What do you think, this is my last question that I have written down, and then we can just chat and finish up if needed, but what do you think was the biggest key to winning that series that maybe the fans necessarily didn't see, or maybe like just a turning point, or what do you think was the moment that you guys knew this series is ours and we're going to make it happen?
I just think after that first game and like having grit, especially in the series, like, The first game of the series we lost, but we're going to show up the next day and we're going to show up and show out and do all we can and put in all our effort and win the game, win the series too eventually. And we did that. We had grit that weekend, which was really good.
Another part that I always think is so interesting too is like, you have obviously represented USA. Like, you played in the Japan All-Star Series last year and you've actually played with a lot of the people that you play against all year long in college. So what is that experience like, kind of going from teammates to opponents and back and forth?
It's pretty cool. Like, getting to meet other players, like this past week, and I knew Avery Hodge and Sid Sanders and Kinzie Hansen, all of them. Like, we're all opponents, but all in the same boat as well. So just knowing them is kind of cool. And obviously we make conversations. Me and Sid were joking around at first, and it's just fun. It's fun.
I love that perspective, because I think just like as an outsider, with how intense that series looks and has looked for a fan for so many years, I thought that the hate was so like the hate was so true. Like, you guys hate OU so much and OU hates you guys, but like, that's what makes it so cool. So it's interesting to hear like, oh, there's no hate. Like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah. It's a rivalry, but there's no hate. There's no hate.
I love it. I love it. Me, I'm like, I hate them.
Yeah.
My rival? No, I hate them.
We've talked about that before, Vivi, like where we were like, we did not used to like people we played against, but we didn't also get to know them maybe quite to the level. I feel like more and more in today's game, you guys are getting to know each other as people, not players.
Especially once you meet them, totally. It really just like opens your perspective. Like, oh, they really weren't like mean or anything.
Yeah, creating this false narrative in my head. Like, no, she doesn't even like puppies.
Yeah. She's that evil. Yeah.
I love it.
That's so funny. Well, the last thing that I wanted to ask you too is about your family. So a couple of pieces here. Like, on the one hand, I'm also a proud Latina, and I know that you were featured in some stuff, even with like ESPNW posting in Hispanic Heritage Month, like this past fall. And also, by the way, it was you, and then there were other people included, like Jessica Mendoza, like Lisa Fernandez, and like you and some other current players. Like, how cool to be among that group at this point. Yeah,
that was really cool. When they came out with that video, I was like shocked. I didn't know what to do. I sent it to my parents first, and they were like, that is so cool. That's so amazing. We're so proud of you. It was just, it was really cool to see.
And what does it mean to you to be part of that Latina representation in our sport?
Honestly, just to represent the Latin community, because I know they're very big. Well, where my dad's from, he's from Dominican Republic, so like they're already big on baseball and all of that. And so to play softball and represent in the softball world instead of the baseball is just like cool, and everybody gets to see that and just representing them.
Yeah, he played in the minor leagues too, didn't he? Your
yes,
dad?
Yes, he did. Yes.
How are those conversations? I feel like they probably get interesting.
Oh, they do. They do. They do through hitting lessons and fielding lessons, all of that. When I go home, you'll just show me what he's been taught, and he'll tell me stories every once in a while.
Oh, how awesome.
That's so cool. Is there anything you wanted to add, Amanda? I mean, we could keep you here forever, Vivi, honestly, but, you know,
I would
try to.
No. I just wanted to say thank you so much for coming on with us. It was so fun to get to know you. You definitely have a big fan in me. Like, getting to know you was so cool, and you're so fun to watch, and even better person too. So thanks so much for coming on and sharing with us, and good luck the rest of the season.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you guys.
A really cool. Yes. Really great fan to have, by the way. If Amanda Lorenz is your fan, you're doing something right. So me too, you know, I'm a fan too, but I'm just saying she's a bigger deal. So.
All right. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you.
So fun to talk with Vivi. I mean, I think anytime that you get to talk to the players who are in the thick of it, right? Like, that's like probably the most fun that at least I have in this job. I don't know about you, Amanda.
Yeah, and just getting to know Vivi on like a different level. Obviously, I've just watched her play, but to kind of hear a little bit more about her and just how exciting that win was for her and her team was just fun to learn. And then also learn that she doesn't hate OU. Like, that's wild. And I got to be honest, like, I don't believe it.
I know. I'm with you. We've talked about this before. Like, yeah. At least between the lines, right? It's hard. Oh, those rivalries.
There's just way too much passion, and there has been for years between Texas and OU, every single series, for there not to be some hate there. Like, they hate each other, and they want to beat each other more than any other opponent throughout the year. And if that's not true, then you guys are really fooling the softball fans, because it's, I mean, I love it. That's what makes it so fun to watch. Like, they look like at whatever cost they want to win these games, like throwing your body in like for a tag, to like sacrificing yourself, just staying there for like not going to give anything up, like that last play of the last game. But and Maya Bland, the way that she went in was just, they both were so fearless and not standing down, like willing to do anything, not scared. I want to win this game.
Yes. I love that you brought up Bland too, because agree, like her face afterwards was like not really phased. Like she was, you know, I think hoping for the obstruction call and all that stuff, which we'll get into, but
totally.
Yeah.
But like, she was not rocked. And like, mm-mm. I mean, like she went in ready to roll, like doing anything to get, like she head was down. She was running, expecting to score on that hit. Oh my God. I love it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Good transition as we move to our plays of the week. We got to start with this one because we've brought it up a couple times, because how could you not? It was,
yeah,
really was, I think, the play of the week if we had to pick one. I know you and I both were like, ooh, let's pick this one for sure.
Yes.
So we'll just show it. Everyone saw it, but we'll show it again.
Boone rips one out to center field. Henry going back. It's over her head. Bland wheeling around third. Play at the plate. The throw and the tag. And they got her at home. As Texas celebrates, Oklahoma is out
to get the cut. And then the throw brings her up the baseline.
So this was a change to the obstruction rule this year. A defensive player cannot block any part of the base unless the ball is in their glove at home plate. You cannot block the leading edge of the plate. They can cross through this area to get to an errant throw. That would be an errant throw up the line that she is getting to.
Chills. I mean, there's a few different parts to this, right? And that's why I asked Vivi about this too, because it's like, there's the playing it off the wall by Hendry in center field. There's the getting the throw off to Vivi herself. She's then turning it into the relay. And then, of course, obviously, Reese Atwood's play at the plate to hang on to it. Honestly, for everyone who's seen A League of Their Own, at the end of that movie, when Dottie Henson doesn't hold on to the ball with her sister, I'm like, this is what we needed from Dottie Henson in that moment. And we were capable of it. She did it earlier in the movie. I'll stand by that forever. But like, this was that moment for Reese Atwood.
Yes, I love it. And I just love that obstruction didn't ruin this amazing softball play. Like, yes. Because yeah, we don't want catchers on purpose obstructing the plate, but like, we also need to play softball, and they're trying to win softball games. And when the throw takes you up the line and you might get in the runner's lane a little bit, like, what else are they supposed to do? Like, they want to catch the ball and still get the out. I'm just so happy. And I mean, she could not have played it perfectly, right? Like, I think that the errant throw, still Reese Atwood was trying her best to not, yes, obstruct the runner's lane. Like, I think that she did it just a perfect job of keeping her feet almost staggered a little bit, trying to still give Bland that running lane while catching the ball, hanging on to the ball. Like, the fact that they were colliding at home plate, like, Bland is going full speed, a strong girl coming at you, and Reese Atwood is just hanging on to that ball, like, doing anything in her power. Like, her falling on her back and then rolling up with the glove, with her glove, like, chills. So awesome. Just a clean softball play.
Yes.
And like, could you ask for anything more to finish that amazing series than such an unbelievable play at the plate to seal that series win for Texas? Like, just awesome. And for those of you who don't know, we have like a little chat, me and Jenna, where we submit our plays of the week, our wins and whiffs of the week. And she beat me to the punch of doing this play. But I mean, this needs to be like a universal play of the week. Like, this is just, exactly, so elite. She was like, no, you could do it too. I was like, no, you know, I'm going to add in commentary. Like, this is too good not to talk about.
It's so true. I want to give credit to ESPN, like with Beth Mowins, Jessica Mendoza, Michelle Smith, the way that they broke it down to, with the tweak to the obstruction rule this year. was very spot on. And I think important, 100%. Right? Because you see, of course, I mean, everyone's trying to get the call right in the moment. So you see all the Oklahoma players like holding out obstruction, right? Like while the play is unfolding, because they're trying to win, you know, like, and I can respect that, totally understand that. But for them to break it down the way that they did, explain like, hey, she's completely out of the way, Reese Atwood is, until the throw. And like the way that they broke it down was also, I think, helpful for the audience. Because you're right.
Great point.
Let them play, you know, like what is she supposed to do? Let the ball go by? Of course not. So yeah. That's why they tweaked the rule. Yeah.
And it truly feels like the obstruction rule is ever changing, right? Like it feels like it's really hard as a softball fan to even follow the differences with obstruction. Every year it feels like they're tweaking this rule. So yeah, I agree with you. I think they did an amazing job explaining, and just obviously with the slow-mo video to go along with it, they did such a great job of explaining why they did not believe there was any obstruction. And hats off to the officials as well for making the right call and upholding the right call, because regardless, you know, with review, we just want the call to be right. But yeah, this, I thought it was just amazing. Loved it.
Yes. Plus one to the umpires too. Got to show them love, because we're hard on them a lot of times, right?
So 100%.
Like, absolutely with you on that one. And then just the fact, we've already said this, but just to reinforce it, like it ended the game. It snapped the Big 12 series streak that OU had for, I think it was like 40 games or something crazy. And obviously three-peat champs, number one team, et cetera, like with the rivalry, it's just, I don't know how you could draw it up better than that. So
it just means more.
It will just mean more. All right, Amanda, your other play of the week.
Let's do it.
Late. Line drive by Falby. That is to the wall. One run is scored. Two runs are in. A third run is in. Falby's got a triple. Florida has tied it in the sixth.
Oh, so good. I think Kendra Falby just totally stepped up in this series in general, but two outs, losing by three, coming up and hitting. I mean, Sydney Berzon had an amazing weekend. She was looking pretty unhittable. And Kendra jumps on the first pitch that she sees, probably a miss by Sydney Berzon. Hadn't thrown a drop ball up in the zone like that. And she takes advantage, and just her speed. Oh my God, the passion, how excited the Gators dugout got. Oh my God. I literally was jumping around in my living room. Obviously I wanted the Gators to win, but gosh, it was so fun to watch. And wow, like so clutch, so clutch.
I don't know if they're is much better feeling as a hitter clearing the bases. Like when you're up to bat, with bases loaded, right? To clear the bases. But not only that, then it's to tie the game. It's like, then you end up taking the series and you upset LSU. Like there's so many layers to the moment, right? That like add pressure and add all these things that she was able to capitalize on. Also, I always love good base running. You said it, her speed. You see that it's not perfectly clean in the outfield. So yeah, take third, you know, like keep going, like don't hesitate. I just love the little things like that too.
Yeah. I mean, truly just as a fan, it makes it so much more exciting to watch, right? Like speed kills and puts pressure on people, but like, that's what makes the game so fun to watch too. Like, yes. I mean, just an incredible job, especially for someone showing her power. Usually kind of more of a, she loves to slap and kind of poke the ball and use her speed. And wow, like she torched that ball.
Yes. So good. So good. Well, because we also, we had too many wins this week. We had good plays of the week. We had too many wins this week. We're going to our win and whiff of the week, and we have a little extra this time around. So the first win of the week, because again, we each have a win of the week this time. Had to do it. There's just too much stuff. Yeah, it's like they're both great, and you'll see why in a moment. But with Stanford, I mean, it has to do with puppies. And I got to see it in person. So I got to see the puppies in person, which is obviously what inspired this. But they had Pups at the Park Day on Saturday when they hosted ASU. And this is what some of it looked like. So the fact that they actually had an entire lineup of all the girls on the team, all the coaches who had dogs. They did a side-by-side pups at the park lineup with each of their dogs. There's a few things here, like, right? Like, first of all the dogs are adorable. Secondly, if you look on the left, you look at Nidri Kennedy, and she's like this big, intimidating pitcher on the mound, right? Like, best pitcher in the country. And then that's her little sweet little dog. It's so cute. Like, that, some things you wouldn't necessarily expect. And then in the top left, Coach Alistair, her dog's name is Leland. And for for those that don't know, Stanford is actually technically short for, the full name is Leland Stanford Junior University. It was named after, the Stanford family started it, named after their son, who died tragically young. And that's Leland Stanford Jr. So she actually got the dog in like Minnesota, and ended up coming to Stanford. And she was like, I don't know if it's a little extra, but oh, well, my dog's Leland, you know?
Cute.
So to see that. And then also one of the coolest things too, that went along with this, they had an organization called Canine Companions, who they're a nonprofit, and they basically provide service dogs and training for children, adults, veterans with disabilities, free of charge. And it was like the coolest ceremonial first pitch I've ever seen, because it was one of the people they work with in her chair with her service dog. And they actually got to throw the first pitch, and her dog took it to home plate. And it was just really incredibly sweet. So puppies, you know, always going to do it for me.
I love it. I love it. Such a great win. All right. And for mine, I'm choosing, obviously, staying on brand with this series again, but this weekend, it was alumni weekend at the University of Florida. And for those of you that don't know, head coach Beth from LSU, it was a Florida athlete, and her team surprised her showing up to alumni day on Sunday. In a shirt that said Beth, and then had all these photos from Beth during her time at Florida, in a Florida jersey. And then on the bottom, it said our favorite Gator. So they surprised their head coach with some love, and just, she was surprised. I saw the video of her, you know, what shirt are we wearing? Like, you know, obviously that shirt wasn't on the itinerary, and all of them showing up like, oh, happy alumni day. Like, oh, just so cute. Like, really cool for them to, you know, support their head coach. I'm sure kind of weird, like showing up to your alma mater and wanting to beat them, you know, help start that program, a part of the first SEC championship team. So, just so cool, but I thought it was awesome. And I just love the fact that she was so surprised.
I love when teams do that to their staff, like their coaches, whoever it is, because usually the coach is like, really, you know, like, yeah. I think I saw that Beth was kind of like, whose idea was this, you know? And it's like, yeah, it's so fun, like getting to celebrate them. I don't know if they like the attention all the time, but like the players love to do that.
Totally. Oh, I love it.
So good. So good. Well, should we go into our whiff of the week?
It's here.
Yeah, it's here. You're right. We'll show it. People can get a sense. So clearly it has to do with the whole being able to review runners leaving early. So this is just one example of many that we've seen this season, to be honest, in several that we saw this week. But in that, the series that we've been talking about, OU Texas, like Oklahoma challenged, for example, a runner leaving early, and then two runs were taken off the board in that moment. Things like that have happened multiple times. Even home runs have been taken away. We've talked about this, Amanda. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, and Texas did the same thing Friday. They challenged Kinzie Hansen leaving early on first base and ended up taking a runaway from them as well. But like, I just think it's a brutal rule. I don't know who walked in there and said, this is going to help our sport, because it just really feels like, yeah, we all want everybody to leave on time and follow the rules, and we want the call correct, right? Like, of course. But I think that now we're in turn seeing coaches kind of use this to their advantage, right? Like waiting for a big opportunity in a game, a big scoring moment, a momentum shifter, and saying like, hey, let's make sure this person didn't leave early. Let's do it and hope that they did. I mean, and it's not even stealing plays, right? Like, it's literally these kids are taking leadoffs and it's taking away home runs from their teammates. Yeah. It's just brutal. It's brutal. You have a freshman coming in having this huge hit, her first, you know, Red River rivalry against Oklahoma, this huge hit off of Oklahoma, you know, like, and that gets taken away, and then she like pops up, you know. Yeah. It's just like, it doesn't feel right, and it just feels like, at least for me, I've been kind of on edge watching these games, like wondering, like, and not wanting to get excited about certain people's successes until I see that the head coach is not going to challenge. I'm like, not, I'm all of a sudden like not wanting to get excited about certain things. And I just think it sucks. And to be frank, and the rule needs to go away immediately. And I'm not saying I blame the coaches, because it's in the rule book. Like if, you know, like, their livelihoods are on the line. Like, they get paid to win softball games. That's really what it comes down to, right? So like, why wouldn't they use this to their advantage of wanting to win softball games? I am not blaming the coaches. I'm absolutely blaming the people that thought that this was going to be a good rule for our sport, because it's not. It's ruining it.
Well, the current format, the way they have it, it just doesn't reflect, in my view, the spirit or the intention of the rule. Like, we were talking about the tweak to the obstruction rule that really lets them play more. Like we saw with that play at home with Reese Atwood. This isn't about letting them, this takes away from just letting them play, right? Like, to me, on the one hand, I can see it's like, well, don't leave early. Like, I've seen some people have that take, right? Okay, well, don't leave early. And it reminds me of the out of the box rule a little bit with slappers, where at first everyone hated it, but over time they got more used to it and started just following the rules. However, the part that I can't get behind is what you said, which is, we're really taking away home runs. Like, you shouldn't be able to take away a play that was going to happen anyway. They leave early on first base, it was a home run, they're going to score anyway. It didn't matter that they left early. But if you're just 100%. Looking at a steal, fine. You know, like, if you're just looking at that play where only the runner is punished, okay. But yeah, it's rough. Like,
it's brutal,
man. It's tough. Yeah. They're definitely, at minimum, I know you're like, go get rid of it together. At minimum, there needs to be a tweak where it's like, it has to be isolated to actual stealing plays or things like that. Because
I would agree with that. If, but like, also, I can't wait to see, like, when it comes down to it, I'm sure we can compare even just midseason numbers of what the steals looked like as a whole of last year compared to this year, because, you know, obviously, like, there's a little finesse in looking like I'm on time, but actually I'm leaving like a hair early, and getting away with it with certain umpires, or most umpires, right? Like, we see it with especially the fast ones, like certain leadoffs, and the way that they take off from the base, like, just trying to make it look on time. But obviously, like, they want to leave as early as possible without getting caught so that they can steal bases. And I think now it's just like, it's really hard. That game, that is kind of getting taken away. And I'm not saying I want them to leave early, but I'm just saying, like, again, speed is fun to watch, right? Like, we like watching that. We I'm not saying leave aggressively early, but, like, you know, we were always told, like, you know, you want to press the envelope a little bit, like, you want a good jump. And now, like, that's really being taken away.
Yeah. I remember, I think Jared Glasgow said it when we had him. He was like, stolen bases are going to go down 50% in the SEC with this new rule.
Oh, yeah. You know, especially with how many camera angles there are, right? Like, the SEC has all the camera angles, all the nice cameras ready to go to catch them, right? Like,
in HD. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, they're ready to go to correct any official mistake, but I hate it.
Yeah. I'm just for letting the kids play. That makes me sound old, I think, but, like, I just think,
no, I think that's, you know,
yeah.
Cause it's way more fun to watch that way.
Yeah. And it even reminds me I mentioned the out of the box rule, but even with the leaping, I know that, like, the wording is not about leaping necessarily in the rules, but, like, they did adjust that too, when you can disengage from the pitching rubber, right? You can't, like, replant, but you can disengage now, aka be a little bit airborne. There was a point where it's like, if they were going to call it, they'd have to call it on every pitch for a lot of pitchers, right? So it's like, how do you balance that out? They tweaked that rule, they've tweaked the obstruction rule. At minimum, this rule needs a tweak.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Oh, man. Good stuff. As always.
I love it.
It's so fun.
What a great episode.
I know. It's so good. I'm so glad we got to talk to Vivi too. Like, there's just so many good things that happen and so much more to come. Like, it's crazy. I'm going to be on Pac-12 Networks again for Fresno State at Stanford. And then I got some more lined up for the rest of the season too. But I'm just excited to also, to your point, like, be a fan and watch this weekend, because there's going to be a lot of good stuff.
Yes, like always.
Yeah. I know you said too, did you miss a pitch in OU Texas? You're like, I will not be missing a pitch. Love it.
No, I didn't. I was locked in the whole time. I was super impressed with the level of play. Kelly Maxwell was shoving. Like, wow. Like, she looked really incredible. It was interesting to see their side by side of just the comparison of percentage of certain pitches that she's thrown. Of each pitch, like at Oklahoma State versus now being at OU and working with Coach Jen Rocha. And there is definitely a change, and it was really interesting to watch, but she looks as good as she's ever looked. And like, she looks like she's happy. She always looked happy at Oklahoma State too. I'm not trying to say that, but she looked really good. She was really, really fun to watch. And she looks like she likes being in that Oklahoma uniform too.
And I'm sure they have plenty up their sleeve for how they'll respond. So
of course
we will see that. But thank you all again for joining us. Subscribe, rate, review the show. If you haven't yet, let us know what else you want to hear from us too. We are obviously always open to discussion. We love it. So thank you again.
Thanks for listening.